Blog Talk Radio.
Don't stop, baby. Don't stop, me. Don't stop, baby. Don't stop me.
I like the way that you move.
Brand new Farnsworth Bentley, produced by Style Raw.
In your hip, I wanna get right between your strips. Use it like Lancome lipstick, scarlet. And frankly, I really do care, my damn, all you will. This is Style Raw, fam. Now back to ma'am. I knew that you could move like that, I saw you dance. And now you got the show out, make me a fan. Turn up the fan, we gon' sweat crazy. What's your favorite Gatorade, lady? Hadn't been stopping Fiji water, maybe. I hope you ain't hungry, got mashed for no gravy. But we can make some, the best of what you said, we can use it, this some new shit, make it hot like Crisco, that's how my flow go, shawty, you know, if you ain't po, stop being so hot po, my music ain't just for the sedity and pretty, it's vocal.
Don't stop, baby, don't stop me, don't stop, baby. Don't stop me.
I like the way that you move.
Shouting, you're killing them hard with them lady pants. Simple elegance, looking better when you dance. Chest to the sun with a thoroughbred stance. You gallop to the rhythms of a native drum chant. Your granny must be Navajo. Your mama do rodeo. Your papa do the Saburo. I bite you, ain't no antidote. The red blouse do arouse. I come at you like a matador does. Attract horny bulls. All the girls are waiting to see which one he pulls. Eeny, meeny, miny, meeny, free, numptual. Enforcer in the Porsche case, the fool wanna duel. You'll cool your f***ing jet to wanna be next. Ooh, I'll probably get life if I let one off. So I let him go like a pro. Sir, Andre with an accent. 3-0-0, Benjamin. Lauren is the middle name that was given by my mama. Success was on her brain. Rain, Bentley funds. Got the umbrellas, Benjamin, got the sweaters. Hey, what more can we sell them? Sun, spring will bring the parasol. Now watch him parasail to entertain us all.
Tell him, Kanye.
Don't stop, baby.
Uh-oh.
Don't stop me. Don't stop, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't stop me.
I think I like the way you move.
Don't stop, baby.
Don't stop, baby. Don't stop.
Don't stop me.
I think I like the way you move.
Don't stop, baby.
Don't stop, baby. Don't stop.
Don't stop me.
I think I like the way you move.
Don't stop, baby.
Don't stop, baby. Don't stop.
Don't stop me.
I think I like the way you move.
Don't stop, baby.
Don't stop, baby. Don't stop.
Don't stop me.
Thank you.
stop this green light. Now you calling me special when you know I can't have you. When I'm under the next one, oh, now you want me to grab you. Oh, do you mean to keep on making me feel? Time has turned into a dream. If you're so toxic to me, what am I feeling? Cause I thought it was over. Got me thinking my feelings over. You keep doing it over and over. You keep calling me back. I'm just trying to get closer. You're pulling me closer and closer. For me, you're like over and over. Cause you keep calling me back. La 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 la. Why you keep calling me back? I'd rather we never pick up, but can we slip up and mix up sometimes? You say you don't mean it, just want it when it's convenient. Am I crazy for waiting on my slide? Now you calling me special when you know I can't have you. When I'm on to the next one, oh, now you won't get aggressive. Oh, do you mean to keep on making me deep? Time has turned into a dream. If you're so toxic to me, what am I feeling? Cause I thought it was over. Got me thinking my feelings over. You keep doing it over and over. You keep calling me back. I'm just trying to get closer. You're pulling me closer and closer. Forming it like over and over. Cause you keep calling me back. La 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 la. You walking on a 10 line. We've been through it like 10 times. I'ma put you in line. Yeah, I had you on an incline. Now I don't even wanna reply. I'ma have to decline. Yeah. You show me I don't wanna rewind. Yeah. No, you a 10, but that attitude ain't fine.
I'll spend my forever with, oh. you're the only reason for it. All the things you do, all the things you do, all the things you do. All the things you do, all the things you do, all the things you do.
So the iceberg never broke. And I poked at it, and I poked at it, and I poked at it, and I poked,
and I poked,
and I poked at it, but it stayed stagnant. Then I poked at it
some more,
and in my notepad, and I wrote,
and I wrote.
If I don't have it, if I don't grab it, if it don't chip, then I tote tag it. One last, I'm a hope,
I'm a hope.
So iceberg, don't float,
don't float.
If I do manage to do damage to you, damn it, it'll be grandest, 10 Grammys or my granny, still standing with a note,
with a note.
That red granite, don't you panic when you make mistakes
the most.
One day it'll make you grow,
you grow.
When you're outlandish and you lose manners, to God you shall consult,
consult.
When the right cameras are still cramming in your face and it provoke,
provoke.
You to act managed, just stay planet, cause you're reaping what you sow. Keep positivity in your heart and keep a noose from round your throat. And when you get mad and when you poke at it, when you poke at it, just note, man, that iceberg is a reflection of you. When you renew your vision, just think if it had some Titanic, the fuck you would do to a critic, my nigga. Yeah, yeah, tell me when does cry, do you hear him, love?
Make sure that people can hear me while I open these mics up. Let me just do a real quick check. Brother Wendell, are you there? Hold on. Let me do this one more time. One more again. Brother Wendell, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, that's good. That's good. Lips, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Danielle, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right. Van, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, because it was some wildness that just happened. It just literally, like, told me I had, like, no service or nothing. It was, like, my phone, and it was telling me my phone was, like, had no service. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like it's crazy. So I rebooted, I came back, and brought everything back that I was missing, so I didn't have to call Brother Wendell. It just kicked back into naturally, but I was getting the circle of death just a second ago, so there's that. So, hey everybody, how are you feeling this evening?
Hey, hey, everybody.
What's happening?
Doing
not
good.
The way I want to start good. A show, not the way I want to start a show, but go ahead. I'm sorry, how's everybody doing?
It's all
pretty
good.
Pretty good.
All right. Right. Well, welcome to Epiphany Radio Universe. The call, the number is 319-527-6300. People who are back-channeling me on Instagram, I very rarely check my Instagram. You might want to go to Facebook Messenger or text me directly. If you want to be called into the show, I saw a couple of people who said that they were very interested in it. Hit me. Or call the number, which is 319-527-6300. All right. Welcome to Epiphany Radio Universe. This is a For Real Entertainment Network sponsored by Raw Links. Why be average when you can be raw? You can get some wrist jewels to make sure that you know all the rules. Come out here, look good, look fly, look fancy. Custom like you like it. Custom like you need it. Custom like you want it. Raw Links. All right. Now, That being said, people will be hopping in throughout the whole thing. I'm still not 100%. I'm about 65 right now, which is really, really good. But, you know, we rocking and we're doing everything. So let me just make sure we check in with everybody. Good brother Wendell, how you doing? How's everything in your corner of the world?
All is well. All is well, brother. Glad to be here with the War Council tonight.
All right, that's what's up. And don't forget, check out this brother's TikToks. He be putting it down on the TikToks. He be dropping jewels in the TikTok. Like, he comes here to drop jewels. He does that everywhere. But he be dropping jewels on his TikTok. So you need to make sure you check that out. All right, we're going to go to the great state of Virginia with Miss Lisa Lips. How are you, Miss Lisa Lips?
I'm good, baby. I'm good.
Right, that's what's up. That's how we're feeling. We good, we good, we good. All right, to my favorite Philly John best friend, Danielle, how are you feeling?
Magnificent, darling. How y'all doing?
Magnificent. Magnificent. And, of course, we're going to go over here to the station manager, the hostess with the mostest, the green-eyed bandit, Mr. Red Meadows, how are you, sir? How are you, man?
My bad, man. I was muted. I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Phenomenal. No complaints.
Well, tonight's show, I think it's what I'm going to call a fireworks show. I know some people are going to get here late, but we're going to talk about intergenerational trauma. And to me, like, there's so many different things when we're talking about our intergenerational, what's passed down, what we know to be fact, what we know to be culture, what we know to be true, how we're nurtured, and how things are treated because of that, and how it affects our decision making, our relationships, how we create culture around ourselves based off of this intergenerational trauma. So before I get into it, let me just make sure I introduce to the listeners, you know, the idea of what intergenerational trauma happens to be referring to. So intergenerational trauma refers to trauma that is passed from a trauma survivor to their descendants. It can also be referred as transgenerational or multigenerational trauma, right? People experiencing intergenerational trauma may experience symptoms, reactions, patterns, emotional or psychological effects from trauma experienced by previous generations, not to limit it to just parents or grandparents, right? And so it leads us into this thing called the trauma response. And the trauma response means that humans survived 1,000 years by evolving the ability to adapt. If you live with chronic stress or live through a traumatic event, certain responses activate to help you survive. This is known as a trauma response. Although these trauma responses are helpful for short-term survival, being in that survival mode headspace is both harmful to both physical and mental health in the long term. When your brain learns the adaptive behavior necessary to keep yourself and your family safe and alive, these adaptations may be passed on to future generations and be challenging to unlearn. Remaining in survival mode can limit one's ability to thrive. Living in survival mode is founded by a response to fear, trauma, scarcity. Thriving is possible when there's developed a sense of lived experience of safety and security, which people suffering from intergenerational trauma may not have a model, cellular knowing, or foundation for, right? So someone who, like the example, someone who may have experienced trauma might struggle to feel calm in situations where they are objectively safe due to the anxiety or another traumatic event that will occur. This occurs, this trauma response can be harmful rather than adaptive, right? So if you grow up in a household where there's generations of yelling and shouting at children and angels stemming from a place of unresolved trauma and pain, in order to understand the intergenerational trauma, it is important to acknowledge the impact of what the parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, ancestors, etc., survived that resulted in their yelling or shouted or things that created the trauma response, right? So I wanted to lay that down real quick. Everybody, welcome Medwina to War Council.
Good Medwina, evening, everybody.
Hey, Edwina.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm just listening in. Thank you, guys.
All right, so So thank you, Jim. Thanks for coming. So this is going to be real heavy and heavy-handed because whether we recognize it or not, there's so many things that impact upon us when it comes to intergenerational trauma. And that trauma can be affected on several different levels. So what I want to do before I start directing things, I want to give everybody's basic feel for how they feel about intergenerational trauma, whether it's your personal feelings, something you've experienced, whether it's something that you know related to it, or how you feel directly affected by intergenerational trauma. All right, so we're going to start at the top and work our way down, of course. But we're going to go ladies first, so I'm going to start with Lisa Lips. Now, also, if you're in the background and you have noisy background, please mute your background until it's time for you to speak, because we can hear everything and it'll come on the recording, and we want to make sure that we don't do that. All right, so just mute your background if you got stuff going on. All right, now, I'm going to start with Lisa Lips, and then I'm going to go to Wendell, then Danielle, then we're going to do it that way. All right, so Lisa Lips.
Yes.
How do you feel about intergenerational trauma? Has it affected you? Is it something that you feel is applicable, or you know, or you don't believe in the actual thing of intergenerational trauma?
I think for me, I have a unique perspective because of the fact that I grew up in a small town as an interracial child. So intergenerational trauma was a big thing in my life because I was, from day one, affected by, even before day one, honestly, affected by what people expected and what my family expected and what the norms of the time were. My mother went in labor with me, and they left her in a hallway between the black ward and the white ward at the hospital, waiting for my head to crown so they could see whether I was going to be light or dark before they would even take her to labor and delivery. So it's been affecting me my whole life. And the expectations of the fact that I came from what was called a good family among black folks, I was expected to be a certain way and to take care of certain things because of who I came from. So, yeah, intergenerational trauma is definitely a big thing in my life, and I do believe that it can be changed if the generation before decides they want to live outside of that, but I unfortunately was not that child.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go from you. I'm going to go to Brother Wendell. Wendell, how do you feel about intergenerational trauma? Do you feel you've been affected by it? Do you have something that you'd like to speak regarding it?
Yeah. I think that I, and I venture to say everyone has, if you've ever heard the words, what goes on in this house stays in this house, then I would assert that you've been affected by intergenerational trauma. Anytime that there is a prevailing need to hide something or keep something from coming to the light, from an adult or an authority figure down to a, and that's passed down to a, or the burden of that is put on to a, you know, a child, then that's a learned trauma response. And I've dealt with that. I've heard those words often, you know, many times in my childhood. I don't think that there's a way the only way to heal intergenerational trauma is by introspective healing. Because we gotta heal ourselves so that we don't pass that on to the next generation. And you know, we can do that in part by holding the previous generation, you know, accountable for what they instill in us, and then actively rejecting and rewriting that narrative. But that it takes a lot of work to do that.
All right, that's what's up. All right, so we're going to go from you. We're going to go to Danielle.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before, and I have dealt with that, but the way it was put to me was, you can't tell the truth, but I can spread your business. And this was within my family. I was also made to feel like something, like I was not supposed to be, because I had health issues when I was little. My older siblings, me being a baby girl, my older siblings, and a lot of my cousins looked at me as if I was getting special treatment. So I was treated like shit a lot. And I never, ever, ever felt like I was at home in the house that I was brought up in. And there was a lot of molestation going on, and I wasn't supposed to talk about that. And then there's the thing, I'm the dark-skinned one in my family. Not that I'm really dark, but they're all red bones. So my mother made it seem like light skin was royalty. And for a long time, I looked at every light-skinned person in my life as them being better than me. I was less than. I was not a nice-looking girl. That's how my mother made me feel. And my sisters as well, they had an attitude with everything that I did. If I accomplished anything I accomplished, they would make me feel like it was something wrong with doing that. So I dealt with a lot of crap. But I turned out to be awesome. So, you know. But yeah, I dealt with that for a long time.
Mm. Wow. That's serious. All right. I'm going to go over to you, Van. And your personal thoughts and feelings about intergenerational trauma.
I'm going to piggyback off of what Wendell had said about what goes on in his house stays in his house. Too many family secrets are kept in his house that have damaged people, family members, for generations. I know a few years ago, I was reminded of a family secret or something that we never spoke of because it was kept in the house by my cousins. And it was so embedded that until we discussed it, I kind of like put it out of my mind. But when it was brought back, the trauma was still there. But you have to make a choice to rewrite the narrative, as was previously said, as to how in your current family for generations you will deal with it and make sure that you don't repeat those same patterns.
Wow. That's serious business. Edwina, your thoughts, your feelings about intergenerational trauma.
Okay, as I think as Danielle was saying, I think I've experienced both what Danielle, Wendell, and Van were also saying about there's certain things that you don't talk about, especially a history of like that one person that they tell you they know is a child molester, or they know that they mess with children, and they have them around at family events, and they're just like, don't go into another room with him, or don't go anywhere with him. It's like acceptable abuse in that, you know, my grandmother sat by and watched it happen to my mother and my aunts at the hands of my father. And then when we got older, she entered an abusive relationship and ended up where we ended up in foster care. And she ended up in a relationship where it was still abusive. And then I find myself getting into similar situations, but the opposite end of it happens is sometimes you absorb those things without knowing, and they become subconscious habits that you adapt, and they become traumatic in that way. But then there's this other thing where you try so hard to be the opposite of what you have come to experience. Like for myself, there is a long line. My grandmother was a slave and a sharecropper, and she lost her husband because of that. They burned down their house and burned down their field. She had to move to New Jersey. So she came up here with 10 kids, no husband. And then she had children that had big families, no husbands. So there was always this space where there were no men. And then the history of the men that I knew was those of ones who were abusive. So I have a distrust for certain situations and experiences that come along with men. And I think that that is a trauma response in and of itself. But I think that the silence of not letting it out and talking about what's going on and looking for ways to find it. And another thing, sometimes you cannot change those older generations. And even if you want to hold them accountable, all it does is build a lot of resentment. But if you find a way to get therapy and try to unlearn those habits and relearn better ways of processing those experiences in our lives that kind of make us relate back to that original trauma that, I don't know what I could say it, we all have kind of experienced in one way or another.
Wow. You know, the funny thing is when we're talking about this, right, and, you know, I do my little research and I get, you know, let me stop saying little. I got to stop doing that. When I do my research, right, and it was talking about, like this one article which comes from Duke EDU, you know, the article is Intergenerational Trauma and the Six Ways It Affects Families, right? And I'm sorry I didn't do an event page tonight, people, because I just really didn't feel like the need for it, because I put a whole bunch of stuff into the event page and nobody ever goes over there unless we're doing something crazy, right? And so I feel like if anything needs to happen, we can just exchange information directly. Because I'm going to start pointing people to the group because it seems to be a quicker and a faster way to really, you know, get people to interact with people who want to do the things that want to happen between that and TikTok. But that's a whole other thing. But going back to what I was saying with this, right, and it was like the one thing that it talked about was the intergenerational trauma it was developed to help to explain the years of generational challenges within families, and that the transmission of historical trauma may begin to negative effect her grandchildren, her grandchildren's children, leading to generations of emotional distance, because they're talking about like a grandmother may interact with your family in a mostly distant fashion, right? And it's saying that the intergenerational problems, including oppression, can be found within families that have been traumatized in severe forms, sexual abuse, rape, murder. This will hide, like, so a lot of things that everybody's talking about, say, what goes on in this house doesn't leave this house, family secrets, what we don't want, we talk about what we don't talk about, the things that are happening, right? And so one of the examples is saying a mother who's struggling with her daughter's sexual abuse might also have been sexually abused by her father, who may have been sexually abused by his father. And the impact of this generational trauma is significant. A parent or a grandparent who never truly healed or explored their own trauma may find it difficult to provide emotional support for a family member suffering from his or her own trauma. Sadly, many families cope with intergenerational trauma by employing two unhealthy coping mechanisms. One, denial, refusing to acknowledge the trauma has happened, and minimization, ignoring the impact of the trauma and making the traumatic experience appear smaller than it really is, right? The ways in which family members cope with this intergenerational trauma can set the precedent for younger generations. For example, a grandparent refused to examine the impact of her trauma, maybe teaching her children intentionally or unintentionally to ignore the impact of their own. Sooner or later, the trauma is to likely be triggered by something, and trauma is not something that you can hide from no matter how hard you try, all right? And so I say that to say this because, you know, I'm just going to bust it wide open on me, so I don't get ready if anything else happens. When I look at the set of trauma that the different things that I go through, like literally, like me choosing women who are narcissists is because my mother was a narcissist because she had some type of trauma that happened to her. You know, her husband beat her into a coma. My grandfather said, that's the bed you made. That's the bed you lay in. You know, the emotions are separating certain things. And then me being in a car, like my memory is so vivid and so clear that we would have to go collect my father from his mistress's house, and my mother would threaten with extreme acts of violence towards herself to make us believe like, yo, if you don't come out, she's going to hurt us. And I remember she was going to crash our car, and I refused to get out of the car. And my brothers jumped, they jumped out of the car, they're screaming, and I was like yelling and screaming because I was determined to stay in this car no matter what my mother did, even though she was going to drive her car into this trunk of this big-ass oak tree. And I realized that whenever someone would threaten me with something, I'd immediately give up because I want them to stay. And how it played out for me is that this is how I got married. The first time she did it, she got something that she wanted, and she just turned up the volume each and every time. And I would ignore it because that trauma response of saying, yo, listen, if you don't do this, I'm going to hurt myself. And I don't care who else hurts, but I'm going to hurt myself. And so literally, I go back to that moment where I'm in the backseat of a car curled into a little ball with my mother pulling the car back and revving the engine and speeding up and going back and forth. The very threat to make someone love you, to make someone want to be with you. It affected me, my choices, who I was as a person, how I chose women. I needed to save somebody. I'm sitting here, this little boy inside of me, my inner child, was always trying to save my mother. I was always trying to save my mother, who loved my father. And my father literally never giving in to my mother. And me thinking that my father was heartless, impacted, shaped, made, created, built, built a foundation around how I felt that love should be. That's trauma. That's an intergenerational trauma thing, literally, that affected me to the point that I had to unlearn and try to figure out how love looks like. Like, I had to really get the help to get the idea of what it is. What is this love thing? How does this work? Why does someone have to take someone away from me in order for me to love them? I land my plane. I just had to bust it open on me just to let you know, like, this shit is deep. Mm-hmm. I don't know about nobody else, but I know when we were looking at this topic, I was like, the deep fucking introspection that I had to do to really think about all the goddamn, look at all the roots of shit. Like, you say, yo, we don't talk about their family secrets. Yo, how many families got fucked up because of secrets? How many? How many of our families got fucked up? Because nobody would tell the truth. Nobody would be like, yo, you know what? You fucked up. Get the fuck out of here. You better go get some help. You can't be here no more. Okay. Motherfucker, put your hands on somebody else. See what we do. Right. See how we move. But, yo, we're not going to talk about that outside the family. We're not gonna do this. We're not going to say nothing. We're just going to keep it to ourselves. Uh-huh. Man, there's so much shit. All right, so Adrian, I hear you talking. It seems like you want to say something, so.
I was going to mention a situation similar where, like, when my brother, one of my brothers was younger, a relative attempted to molest him, and he fought him off. And then when he went to tell the parent that we were staying with, she said, you can either stay here or you can go back to foster care. That's the choice she left my brother to make. And then I realized that, like you're saying, we look at these situations and we either have a tendency to stew in them or we have a tendency to let them make us harder. Or we do that deep dive where we can see, all right, this is the thing that happened and this is how it has affected our life at large, and I'm ready to take a look at these habits and how they've affected me and how they've made me a different type of person and then do something about them. And I don't see my brother being able to do that because he doesn't want to have the discussion, but I think there's a lot of men that if they drew down to their violence or their inability, and women as well, to be able to commit and to understand and to trust, it all goes back to these relationships that were traumatic before we were able to develop an opinion on them. Like you said, we have to unlearn those.
Mm. All right. Let me go to Wendell.
Yes, sir.
Because I can literally hear the gears in your head going. Because you think real loud. You think real loud. I'm like, I don't want to be thinking mad loud right now. Like, I'm like, let me go to this brother. So your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on the idea of minimization and denial of family secrets, because you had brought it up first.
Yeah. I remember when I was an adult, when I finally got the nerve. I was an adult and married before I finally got the nerve to address my molestation to my parents, because it happened at the hands of a trusted family friend, one of their relatives. I would go over to our neighborhood mother's house, and she would watch me and my brothers until my parents were able to come in and get us. And then during the summertime when there was no school, their daughter, is either their daughter or their niece, would come over to our house to watch, and babysit us until we could stay home by ourselves. And it was during the summer times that I experienced my molestation at her hands. And I didn't know how to process it. And like I said, it wasn't until I got into my... I was well into my 40s before I could even really address it to my parents. And I remember how my mother responded, and she was like, "Well, you should have said something." And I said, "Well, I did say something, but y'all didn't believe me when I told you." And then the response after that was, "But please, I'm so sorry. I have to pay for therapy. Please, I beg your pardon. I beg your forgiveness, because I want to get into heaven. And I'm sorry that I didn't protect you and allow this to happen." And I mean, it helped that it was acknowledged, it also hurt, because it was minimized when I told you what happened to me the first time. And instead of hearing me out and believing me at face value, it was said, "You should have said something." And that it wasn't believed when I made my statement. So minimizing is horrible. It further causes the person on the receiving end of the trauma to retreat and so even if the offending party is trying to acknowledge what it was that they did, anything other than complete understanding is going to be detrimental. And it's one of those things where you may not, you did harm unintentionally when the trauma happened, and now you're doing harm again after the trauma has happened, and it's that double whammy. It's so important for for not only for accountability, but for actual forgiveness and healing to happen, for traumas to be recognized and accepted as fact from the person who was on the receiving end of it. If there's going to be any real, you know, chance for reconciliation and for healing. But yeah, that hits me hard. Because, you know, children don't always know how to advocate for themselves. And if the person who's supposed to be their advocate also is an instrument of their trauma, then, you know, what do they do with it? What are they supposed to do with that?
That's the point. And I remember my ex told me that her mother watched her stepfather rape and molest her, and then later said, you know, I'm a Christian now. God has forgiven me for all of those sins.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, how dare you? And the thing was that not only, it was like a triple amount of injuries that was going on. One, my kids live at the top of this one street. Their great grandmother lived two blocks down and over from them for the amount of years. Knew that they were on the face of the planet. Never bothered with them until she was on her deathbed. And she wanted to meet her black grandchildren. You know, because I guess, you know, heaven's involved. Let me forgive all these things. Not to mention that the mother went off with this stepfather, created a whole other branch of the family that happened to be quote-unquote white, and the white folks didn't acknowledge the black side of the family. But they acknowledged that their mother was a person of color, produced person of color, because she could pass.
Mm-hmm.
And allowed these things to happen. And then had the nerve that when the grandmother died to come to the house. I was like, listen, I stayed at that house until I really had to go home, right? Because I had the surgery because he was a baby. And I was like, I was gone for a few days. But I was waiting for this, man. I was prepared to go to jail because I was like, listen, I'm going to beat you where you stand. Because no one has ever approached you for the sins that you've done. The system has allowed you to get away with it. Nobody's ever reported you. Nobody's ever said anything to you. But I'm just venting and letting my stuff out. La Perla Negra. I can hear you thinking really loudly too. So.
Like I said, my mother was the head of the whole family because my father passed away when I was very, very young. And like I said, there was a lot of molestation. My brother raped me. My cousin raped me. My uncle came in there and messed with me. Men that she rented rooms to bothered me. I mean, it was just, it had become a normal thing because when I tried to talk to her about it, she was like, what are you talking about? Stop lying. You know, you're too fast. Stuff like that. I was made to feel like it was my fault because I developed extremely, extremely young. I got my menstruation really early. I developed breasts very early. And it's like everybody in the family who I thought was supposed to protect me, my sisters and all of it, they were completely against me because of what my mother said. And what was behind that was finance. Because my mother had this thing where she just, you know, some people are just, they draw money to them, okay? And she was one of those people. It just came to her very easily. And everybody came to her for loans and whenever they needed something, but I couldn't get anything. I couldn't get any help. And that was always made to shut up. And I'm like, you know what? I became very, very rebellious behind that. I just was like, it wasn't in a disrespectful way towards her, but I ran the streets. I stayed away from home. And I just would stay overnight where I felt welcome, because in that house, it was just never, no comfort. Even my stepfather, she hooked up with a guy and would leave him home. She would go do what she's doing, spending her money, running the streets or whatever, and he'd be there bothering me. And when I call her to try and tell her, the only thing that she said was, don't you ever call me at this number again. So everything was supposed to be kept quiet. On top of that, I'm dealing with the issues of being the dark-skinned one in the family. Like I said, I hate repeating myself, but this was very real for me. So all of that abuse that I dealt with led me, like I've said many times before, to toxic relationships. That's all I've ever been in, is toxic relationships, because that's all I knew. Not saying that I didn't meet good people in my life, but literally, because I dealt with that so much when I was coming up, that's what I thought life was about. People talking really, I mean, talking to me like I'm not shit. Any kind of thing that now don't get it wrong. I've always been a go-getter. I've always went after what I've won, regardless of what people said to me, but I believed what they said as well. But in a twisted way, it never stopped me from going to get what I wanted to get. It actually kind of pushed me to do it and to spite them for telling me, you can't do that. You know, it's not possible, or you're ugly, or something like, you know, all that kind of shit. And I don't know how I got through it. Well, I did have some therapy. I did. But for the most part, you know what? It was a spiritual thing for me that healed me. So I'm good. But I never forget it. Hey, y'all, don't get it twisted. I'm fucked up in here. I've seen a lot of shit take place, a lot of things go down. And when you are dealing with a toxic world such as mine, you tend to see exactly how far the rabbit hole goes, aside from being in a good relationship and seeing the better side of it. I haven't had a good relationship. My marriage was, man, please. But I'm good, y'all. I'm cool beans. Really, I am. Because I speak life into everybody. So.
Okay. Well, we'd like to welcome Dawood. Slid on through. Dawood, how are you doing, good sir?
Hey.
I'm doing fine, bro.
Hey.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Sorry I'm late.
Hey, Dawood.
Hey, how you doing? This is this sounds
great.
Powerful, this discussion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I jump in?
Well, matter of fact, why don't we let you jump in right now?
Okay, so I heard much of what Danielle said, but what was the question that you asked her that brought out that powerful testimony?
Well, what happened was we had already laid the groundwork for intergenerational trauma and the things that happened, and we were talking about two of the things that affected, which is, you know, basically denial and minimization, you know, of the thing. And so the things that actually led to people, you know, with everything else. And so what Danielle was explaining, you know, because of people financially. Like, the one thing that I'm also going to point out, because some people might be in a situation with someone because their finances are tied to that particular person, and they can hold that over them, thereby making them an unwitting hostage in a situation, which makes them have to question their survival, you know, versus, you know, receiving justice for the things that, for the wrongdoings that had happened. But,
oh, no doubt, that's,
you can take
that's
it
a big
here.
Part of, it's a big but little discussed part of intimate, what they call intimate partner abuse. And it's better to frame it as intimate partner abuse than domestic violence, because domestic violence is generally looked at as somebody hitting somebody. So if you frame it as domestic violence and people's connotation is somebody hitting somebody, you never really get to see the full spectrum of intimate partner abuse, because intimate partner abuse is financial. It's also emotional. It's using certain words, shaming, all of that kind of stuff. So that's one of the things that I'm kind of shifting my language in the way I say things, because it is very easy to let people off the hook if you just call it domestic violence. But what it really is this intimate partner abuse. It's one partner that has intimate knowledge or connection with somebody else, and they choose to exploit them any way they know how, whether it be money, whether it be, you know, the insecurities, things like that. But me, myself, when it comes to this particular subject, it's kind of like, it's crazy, because I was talking about this in my intimate, you know, in my domestic violence class today. And what we were talking about is what you do when you hit your partner and how it impacts other people. And I gave an example of my situation when I was younger. My dad brutally beat my mom when I was, you know, six, seven, eight years old. And each one of us were affected differently in the family. So for me, I'll say this. When my dad would practice that on my mom and did that on my mom, but then my mom finally, you know, went on the run and left my dad, there was something that happened. My mom was one of the most loving, affectionate people or women that I had ever run into. And they always say that your mother is your first girlfriend. So my mom would be very open, affectionate, and loving. But when my mom had to do it by herself and go on the run from my dad, she had to go into her masculine, because she had to take care of the family. She had to take care of the bills. She had to take care of protection and all that. And as a consequence, that affection and that love was gone. So here's the thing. If you're a young person and you're seeing this kind of stuff and you don't really have the understanding, the experience, or the words, what my mentor calls a wordless experience, to process that, you take it in a certain way and then you grow up with it. So me, myself, what my mind processed it as is women give you love and then they take it away from you. So subconsciously what I started doing was I started attracting women who would do just that. They would give me their love and they would take it away from me, because that's what I thought love was, based on the impact of what my dad did to my mom and how my mom reacted. Many times we don't realize why we can't have a good relationship or why we keep failing in relationships, and we don't understand, because it's the impact or the cause and effect relationship that happens based on what one person does or a couple of people do. And so what ended up happening was, is my sister, if I can speak freely, my sister is totally anti-marriage and really totally anti-long-term relationship. And the reason being is because as a result of this, my mom, when she got back into the dating world, you know, she dated a couple of dudes. My sister looked at that at her age as my mom dealing with dude after dude after dude after dude. And that traumatized her. That traumatized her. And so now think about it this way. One of my favorite femininity coaches or strategy, whatever she calls herself, April Mason, talks about not only what is your financial legacy, what is your love legacy? If you are showing your children, I'm showing my children, that it's okay for a woman to be abused, it's okay for a man to be emotionally, a woman to be emotionally unavailable, you are now passing down that love legacy to your children. And to me, that goes perfectly in line with the topic, which is transgenerational, what you call it? Because it's almost like they're watching you, and then they're forming their idea of love, of relationships from you, and then what they're going to do, they're going to pass it on to their children. And somebody has to break the curse. But we cannot break the curse until we first find out what the fuck happened to us. Because if we don't find out what happened to us, we're just going to say, you know what I'm saying, like Danielle, you could tell that Danielle has done deep spiritual, intellectual work, and she knows exactly where the shit comes from. But it's a lot of people that haven't done that work. A lot of people. And so people just say, you ask them, well, why you keep doing what you're doing? I'm just messed up. You know what I'm saying? And she got context, and she has background and body to what she's saying. But can you really say that you ran into a lot of people who can speak like that? I can't.
Right.
And so I think that one of the most important things for all to do is to really search in our lives and go back to our early ages and find out what was the love legacy led to us. Why do we look at love? I was going to do a live this week, but I didn't do enough research or I didn't get around to it. But eventually I'm going to do a live talking about the sale of love and how record companies and media sell you love as a product, but that love is not real. So you begin to, let's just put it this way, like I'll give you a hit off the top. If you listen to Anita Baker records, Anita Baker always talks about this love that a guy gives her instinctively. She uses the word instinctively a lot. So you listen to that shit, and you think that every guy out there is going to give you love instinctively. 90% of these dudes can't read your mind. They don't know what you need. So you have been sold a product based on something that touches your feelings, but it's not real. And I remember my mentor saying this to me. He said, "Daoud, is it possible that you have a concept based on a song, but the song is not real?" So when we talk about intergenerational curses and things like that, a lot of these things have to be factored in. Because if you look at the music that the children listen to now, it's not about love. It's about getting high and quickies. And so what kind of love legacy are they going to leave their children based on that crazy shit that they're listening to? I think all of these are factors that we really have to look at.
Right. That's dope. That's dope. That's definitely dope. I'm going to go from you to Lips. Lisa.
Yeah. For me, I was also molested as a child, but it came from generations of things. My paternal great-grandfather had children with my great-grandmother and with her sister. And the kids were interspersed within each other. My great-great-aunt lived down the street, and he'd get in a fight with my great-grandmother, and he'd go stay down there with her. He had five children with my great-great-aunt and seven children with my great-grandmother. And so it came from generations of that. My grandfather grew up seeing that and didn't want to be that man. And he married and settled in with my grandmother, and they had 10 children over 30 years. But the children saw it because my great-grandparents lived with my grandparents. So my father's generation saw what was going on. So then those kids grew up with the mindset that a man could go and do what he wanted. And my grandparents had 9 sons. They had 10 children and 9 sons. So each of them were affected differently. My father grew up being very arrogant and very, like, kind of almost lauded over my mother. My mother had been a runaway and wasn't very educated, but she was also a product of rape to a mother who passed as white her entire life. We didn't know she was passing until she died, when her sister showed up at the funeral, and we never knew. So, you know, there was all kinds of traumas in the background that fed into what brought me to where I was. So when my uncle molested me, my mother walked in on it, but they blamed me. It was my fault. I was 9. He was 18, but somehow it was my fault. And so nothing was ever done of it. I was made to go home by myself after being raped with a straight razor to my throat. And they left me in the house, and they went back to the family reunion and locked me in the house. And I just had to deal with it. And recently, a cousin who wasn't even born at the time when it happened called to inform me that that uncle is now dying. And I guess she wanted sympathy, or wanted to know if I was wanted to come see him or whatever. And I was like, well, oh well, you know, good riddance to bad rubbish as far as I'm concerned. Because nothing was ever done about the fact that he did this to me, and then eventually did the same thing to several other members of the family. So I have no remorse for his life at this point. It wasn't just that thing happened when I was 9 and it was over. Any opportunity that he got to terrorize me my entire life, he took it. I went and visited an uncle at one point, not knowing that he lived in the basement of that house. and woke up at 3 a.m. with him just standing over my bed. And I was a grown woman. I was 30 years old at that point. You know, so it was never handled. So I have no sympathy for his life at this point. As a matter of fact, I may dance at the funeral if I am invited, but I have no real remorse at all for how I feel about it. And as far as other things in my life, like I said, my father was very arrogant. I was his possession, and I was gaslighted my entire life. They would tell me what I wanted to hear, and then if it didn't work the way that I wanted it to work, then it was my fault because I chose the wrong thing. But you encouraged me to choose what I chose. So I was constantly gaslighted. I was never sure of being right in what I chose to do. So it made me, as an adult, very unsure about the things that I would choose to do. And because I was always the oddball kid amongst everybody, because I was a mixed race in a time when that was an issue, I never had a lot of friends or a lot of people I was close to. So it's made me become very much a loner and stand in my own space rather than to be involved with anybody, because I don't trust people's opinions of things because I was told so many wrong things coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Whew. We're gonna finish this out. I'm gonna see if Van Metals, if you wanted to contribute to this portion of it before we move on to the next thing.
Nah, you good, bro. Let's move on. That's enough trauma there. I don't have any of that kind of trauma for myself.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for sharing, because it is a way that you have to have a certain type of strength to be able to share your particular trauma with people. And not to say that this is something that we're all addicted to. It's just something that we have to point out to say that these are the things. This is a very real cross-section of what is a known thing for intergenerational trauma that we're experiencing in the very real time, you know, and the very real thing that happens with certain things, you know, the family secrets, people not telling people things of stuff. And recently, my daughter told me something crazy, and then her mother left her in a bad situation. And she didn't even tell me. I was like, why would you hold on to this information and not tell me? You know? But her mother trained her to keep secrets. Trauma. And it's crazy because all of us are affected one way or the other, whether we like it or not. But I'm going to move from that particular thing of intergenerational trauma, right, to talk about something that's more... So that's global, from the diaspora, if you will. But I want to talk about historical trauma in quote-unquote marginalized groups. You know, they talk about people of color, us, right? And, you know, like literally how our trauma is seen, not even seen. It's not even acknowledged, really. Not really acknowledged. But, you know, and I'm not comparing or saying something to the thing that I'm trying to bring up some type of trope, but historical trauma was first discussed in relation to survivors of the Holocaust and their descendants, right? But this type of intergenerational trauma also affects many other groups and communities, in particular Black and African American people, because people, we have a certain type of historical trauma. Now, on the flip side of this, I want to talk about Bobby McFerrin real quick. Bobby McFerrin is one of the first people I had ever heard talk about ancestral rhythm, right? And he was saying how rhythm travels through you, and that it's in your blood because of the rhythms that are happening, and that we repeat things and we do things based off of this idea. Now, this is a beautiful thing when it comes to rhythm when we're talking about things, because we feel music a certain kind of way deeper than anybody else, in my opinion, not anybody else's, right? And I'm just using that as a good example to say here's something that's going on where he's doing an interview on HBO. He was talking to these young students, and he was telling them, like, you know, the ancestral rhythm that you have within you, you know, the things that you have that are already there, the way that you feel the drum, the way that you feel these different things. And I agree with them, all right? But I also happen to think that when it comes to our trauma, nobody acknowledges the type of trauma that happens to a people that you enslave, and you've done horrible things. You've taken them to breaking system. You've taken them from the Fertile Crescent of Africa to the slave trading system in the Caribbean, right? And then you brought them to the States, and you stole people. You caused a brain drain. You stole people who are able to harvest and live on savannah. It wasn't just a thing that you just needed people. It was a way that you needed to create a system. And that system, you know, from not only the people who died in the Middle Passage, but to the people that got killed, that got hurt, that anything else, that happened in all these different places, and everything else was going on from the Caribbean on back. And for it to not be acknowledged, to the very rules and laws and how you put things together affect us. And it's not acknowledged. Right? So the historical trauma, what we suffer from, I wanted to get everybody's opinion on that and what they thought about in that particular thing. In particular, my sticking point for this in particular is the mass shooting that happened in Buffalo. Now, I was very unfortunate to watch the video because he filmed himself killing people. And I saw the video from his perspective. It looked like Call of Duty. That's what it looked like. He literally went, like, I've never felt anger and angry in my entire way to see someone be so callous about us, who wrote a manifesto, who wrote all these things that Tucker Carlson permits on, you know, basically uses in Fox News and says all this whole replacement theory of everything else that's going on, literally. And for them to call him a teenager versus Mike Brown's man. Teenager. Oh, he was upset because of COVID. He was a little crazy. He was taken without incident. Nobody put a bullet in this man. And I was saying, I was arguing. I said, I can't fucking go around the corner to the goddamn supermarket without getting stopped. I've been stopped 6 times. 6. Just doing my business. Just being black. Anytime that we look at anything, we are killed, unarmed, and all this other stuff. That's trauma. Every time they put it up on the news, trauma. We're experiencing this. So that's my particular sticking point. But I want to talk about that. Let's talk about that type of intergenerational trauma. Let's go from there. So anybody can hop in when you feel like.
We already know why they give them special treatment, and it's always they want to study them instead of taking the necessary action right then and there like they do us. If there is not a black person, a person of color, that could grab an assault rifle, a weapon, any kind of weapon, and travel with it freely. Okay, they wouldn't get a couple of centimeters away from their house if law enforcement was around. And it doesn't even have to be law enforcement. It could just be white neighbors that would call and report it, or they would jump in their face and bother them about it. Yet these folks, they plan everything that they do. It is calculated, it is planned for a long time, premeditated before they even wake up that morning when they're going to put it into action. And it's because we have always been and we always will be looked at as less than. There are still some races out there that believe that we are subhuman, we are animals, we are monsters. When in reality, they are the ones that are killing every damn body, blowing up shit, torturing people, kidnapping people, doing all kinds of horrible things. And it's sad to say, I kind of went numb a few years ago. There was a video, and they said that it was fake, but it wasn't fake. These two white boys had this black girl in their apartment. I think it was a dorm room. I'm not exactly sure, but they hung her And they showed it from beginning to end, her struggling, her body wiggling, she trying to fight to get out the noose. And they just blew it away. They made the video disappear. But I remember that. And those boys were never caught. Nothing was ever done to them. And if it was, they didn't say anything about it. And this shit has been allowed to go on for centuries. It isn't just 300 years, 400 years. It's still going on to this very day. They still hunt us. Just a couple months ago, very, very nice young man went on this trip out in the camp in some damn where, way out in East Bubblefuck with all white men. He was the only black guy. His wife, I don't know what she, but she wasn't a black woman, I don't think. But regardless, as soon as she dropped him off there, she got about a half an hour away, and something hit her in her gut. So she called his phone. He didn't answer. She turns her car around and drives back up there, and just that fast, that man had bullets all in his back and in the back of his head, a couple in his gut, and they were saying that he attacked them. This man had a reputation for not swatting a fly. He would give you this, literally give you the shirt off his back. He never even touched. And the coroner that did the report on him stated that it was murder, but somebody wanted it covered up, folks in the higher places, and they ruled it as those men were defending themselves. How do you defend yourself when the person that is killed is shot in the back more times than is shot in the front? That man was running away. They are still doing this shit, and it seems like it's never going to end. This kind of shit really, really does bother me. I don't talk about it a lot because the sensationalism from the media is also, it's not just part of informing us, but it's also a part of continuing to keep us segregated, keep us separated, keep the hate going. Even though we need to be made aware of this shit that's going on, they more so like it because it still continues to, keep us in the mindset of being hate-filled. It's hard to want to trust and like people of a certain caliber, of a certain color, because of the bullshit that they do to us. The trauma that they put on us for years and years and years. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood with all Jews and all Italians, okay? The other black folks was way, 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 way on another side of the world, okay? And I didn't experience racism back then when I was growing up. I didn't experience it until I went to boot camp for the Navy. And that's when I started being called a nigger and all kinds of hateful shit. And I didn't understand it. So, you know, this thing with this racism and this hate, and then they try and turn around and say it's not a thing about color. My ass. Who are you talking? It must be somebody else in this vicinity that you're talking to. Because clearly I'm a woman of color, and I know what it's about. You're not affected by it. Only when it comes down to them needing your help and wanting your support, does color not matter? Oh, we should love everybody. Fuck you. That's how I feel.
So, anybody else want to hop in?
It for me, it's not even just the fact that shooter was unharmed when taken into custody. It's the fact that the cops prevented him from taking his own life. He killed all these people, and when he was surrounded, finally, he put the gun to his head, and they talked him down.
Mm-hmm.
So they were determined to preserve his life. It wasn't it was a choice. They were determined to preserve his life. And I see them setting it up now for it to be some kind of a mental illness defense or something. They brought him to court yesterday in a paper gown and made him look as mm-hmm. pitiful as he could possibly look.
Mm-hmm.
They create around the situation to make it look mm-hmm. The way they want it to look. It has nothing to do with what's right or wrong in the moment, or whether or not mm-hmm. this person has a mental issue, or if this was a calculated thing. And they can't deny that it's calculated, because their surveillance footage is much as 2 months old of him casing that store. He was there the day before and had an hour-long conversation with a gentleman who just kind of hangs out at the store because he lives in the neighborhood and it's his social thing. That man spoke on the news yesterday about talking to this boy for an hour the day before about the neighborhood and the things that go on in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, the thing that kills me the most about it is that we know for a fact that they keep records of people. They keep records of people. Like, literally, they watch people, and they know.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had to know. There's flags that go up, much like I can put a joke up on. I remember I got in trouble on Facebook because I put up a meme of Hitler playing a video game, and it says, this is what started World War II, right? They mm-hmm. made me go to the sticks and the weeds to get my profile back. The first profile I lost, because I was routinely having, I would get on here in these groups and argue with these white people that were crazy as shit, right? And so, and it wasn't just the goddamn entitlement that they had. It was just the pure like ignorance of not knowing shit. Like, not knowing a goddamn thing about the world or who the people are around you that surround you. Like, it's crazy, right? And so I literally got my profile taken, the first one I had, taken away from me because of that, right? They wouldn't even let me download my shit. And then this thing with whatchamacallit, like, literally, they made me talk to a panel of people, right? And I had to go and get myself there. I had to sit there and be like, listen, as a black man, blah, 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 this was done in a joke, blah, 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 such and so forth. it was a whole setup in Facebook I had never seen before. And I have never seen since. I've never seen it since. But the thing is that, like, literally, when we're looking at the different things, people know things and they know what people are doing and they know how to find people. They know how to find people,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, literally, like, it's crazy how no one knew that this person was doing this shit this entire time. And not only that, not only did they talk him down and preserve his life and make him look pitiful, it's like, I figured that once Kyle Rittenhouser had gotten off, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be open season because mm-hmm. basically this is the type of shit that people do. When cops can come and shoot you 5-7 times in your back. Like, I literally watched a thing where a woman who had dementia, who was having mental health issues, I watched a cop pop her twice. Scream. And the way he was screaming, he wasn't even moving. She was standing where she was at. He didn't pull out.
She couldn't speak
anything. Yeah, he didn't pull out anything to stop her. He was like, and I've watched so many things where people are having mental health issues and they just shoot them. It's just like the brother who was driving his Jeep, you know, he's like, I wanted to pull to where the light was. And the dude's like, you fixing to ride the light. And he said all this crazy shit to him, threatening him within his life. He said, fuck your uniform. Fuck who you happen to be. You're less than human.
Mm-hmm. That was here in Virginia.
Yeah. And it's like, I think that my major thing is that when some people put on a badge, they forget that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
They forget that the same responses that they have, they feel like it separates them. They feel like anything else,
mm-hmm.
and they really don't like it with certain things. Like, I'd rather get out of the situation, so I'm not going to beef with you. I'm going to give you whatever you need to get yourself done, and then I'm going to settle this out in court because I know how court works, and I know exactly what the fuck to do when I get in court. But I'm going to get myself to that point. It's no use in arguing. He give you a lawful order. Listen, the more compliant, because some people are based on the idea of how much power that they have when they do things. And then when they see certain things, a lot of these people, we already know that so many of the organizations law enforcement organizations have been infiltrated. Like, I really wanted to do this series about gangs within the sheriff's department in LA, but I realized that's kind of dangerous. Kind of dangerous to do that shit. You know? This one woman, she was speaking at a conference. She was surrounded by deputies, and they were trying to take her. They were trying to literally kidnap her and make some shit up. Like, she had to have people around her fight with these people because they literally was like, we don't like what you're writing, what you're saying. We're above the law. We'll take you, and we'll do whatever we want to do with you. It's just like the officer who raped all those women, you know? Mm-hmm. He was doing that shit for a mean-ass fucking minute. Nobody stopped him. To bring us back around, because I went off on the beat path and all that other stuff. I want to make sure everybody's heard. I don't want to dominate the conversation. Anyone else would like to hop in? Or better yet, let me reframe it like this. Because we were talking about intergenerational trauma, how it's passed on and stuff like that. The late psychiatrist Vivian Rakoff, PhD, introduced the concept of intergenerational trauma in his 1966 paper on children of Holocaust survivors. The conversation exactly of how trauma is transmitted was contested for decades following this paper. Right, some experts in the medical community attribute the intergenerational problems to the stress of living with a traumatized person who may still be reliving a horrified effect, flashbacks, PTSD. All right. Others attributed to trauma to children becoming containers for their parents' unwanted pain, right? And that goes into epigenetics, right? So in the 1990s, researchers began to look at the biological mechanisms of intergenerational trauma via epigenetics. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, this is the study of how your behaviors and environment can cause changes that affect the way your genes work. And the 2018 review explored evidence that suggests children may be influenced by exposure to parental trauma that occurred before they were born and even prior to their conception. Some of the ways that they state can be passed down include DNA modifications. Hold on to that. We're going to put that in the thing. Because I know people like DNA modification. What? Yeah, that. In utero, memory, cultural messages and messaging and conditioning, right? Cultural patterns, cumulative emotional wounding, dominant family narratives, normalization of hatred, cruelty, dehumanization towards others. We just talked about the thing in Buffalo. Parents bypassing or not coping with their own trauma, and aggression and microaggression. So, to reframe everything else like that, I want to make sure that we get to Brother Wendell, because I don't like to waste the time. And of course, Van and everybody else. So, Van and Dawood, because, you know, we got all the smart brothers in this piece. Wendell, what do you think?
As someone who has, I've put myself in spaces to kind of actively, you know, protest and put myself out there in cases of, you know, injustice. I mean, I traveled to Louisville, Kentucky with the militia for the for Breonna Taylor, and then there was you know, the dude from Wisconsin that came and shot up, you know, those, you know, the white boy that came up and shot up protesters and was taken alive, and there was nothing that was ever done to him, and with all these other, you know, people who do horrendous acts, and all they need to shield them from accountability is the color of their skin, and it incenses me. It makes it that much more glaringly obvious about the disparities that we, you know, that we face, and no one's going to look out for us but us. So, yeah, we got to do what we got to do, you know. Strap up, you know, hands down, arms up. I have a T-shirt that says that. One of my brothers in arms put that together for me. and I believe it. Mm-hmm. Stop putting our hands up and saying don't shoot. Put your hands down and instead pick up your arms. Mm-hmm. But that's just me.
So, Van.
Bro, this kind of stuff makes me angry. I'm not even going to lie. It brings out a side of me that I try to keep locked away and hidden. And I write it out most of the time. But there are times where I just sit and I reflect. And it could have been me. It could have been any one of my kids. And it irritates me and upsets me. So I speak about these things whenever I can in hopes that I can be a voice of reason and a voice of change. The fact that, you know, Danielle pointed out that we wouldn't get a few feet from our house. You just said that you were stopped 6 times just for going to the store. This man traveled 300 miles to play out a video game with black people's lives. And he admitted that he targeted that specific area because it was heavily African-American populated. But he was taken without incident. And the one person that fired at him was unable to pierce his armor that he had on and ended up dying himself for trying to save everyone else. And yes, they're calling him a teenager, but he is very much going to be charged as an adult. So they need to stop trying to downplay the fact that, oh, he was mentally ill. Oh, he wasn't on his meds. I buried a family member this weekend because her own child decided to take her life. So I'm utterly disgusted and upset at the same time.
Jesus. Oh, man. Daoud.
Times like this are very ambivalent for me. I have conflicting feelings because I grew up in the Black Power movement. You know, much of my 20s, well, my entire 20s, three quarters of my...
Did he drop?
Hold on. Okay. Yeah, he dropped. He'll probably call right back in. There he is.
Sorry about that. Anyway, so I know that we were warning people for years that this shit was going to happen. And people was laughing at us, calling the police on us, and all sorts of other stuff, and now it's here. And I'm not saying that with a condescending tone. I just really wish we was wrong, and we weren't. So for me, you know, I have that one side, and then the other side of me says that this shouldn't even be an issue. It shouldn't be right. Not in 2022, but it is. And a lot of people are saying, well, the answer is that, you know, people should carry guns. And the thing is that if you're in a shopping center and outside of people running around, how the hell are you going to know this dude is there? This is the AR-15 we're talking about. This is not no 22 or 25 or 38. This is AR-15. And I spoke to a coworker today who watched the video also, and he was telling me that basically that he has a brother that is an ex-cop, and they have, like, I guess they have these armored vests, and the metal inserts of them, they have an expiration date. So when the expiration date is done, you take it out, and you dispose of it. So long story short, they were trying to shoot this piece that was from the bulletproof vest with, like, several different guns. And one of the guns that they used, you know, it basically a 32 couldn't get through it, 38 couldn't get through it. But when they used the AR-15, it went straight through it with no problem. So that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people that using stuff that if they shoot at you, you're not coming back from that. And I don't really know what the answer is in America, per se. Because it almost seems like, I will say this, I was eating lunch today with my daughter, and I was watching as most of the politicians were trying to condemn this, but then it started turning into a political thing where the Democrats were saying the GOP fostered the environment for this. That's bullshit. Because if you believe that, then it allows you to be able to say this is new. This is not new. This is not new. This is what America was built off of. And that's just the harsh reality. And so, you know, there's talks that need to be had offline about how to handle stuff like this. Because really, we can't really talk about this on this line and be sincere, because people will listen, because there's other things that really need to be done. But this is not new. And anytime you hear somebody try to blame it on a political party or Donald Trump, really, they mean well, but that's bullshit. This started years ago before Donald Trump. You know, when Donald Trump was still somebody that rappers was mentioning in their songs. So this ain't got nothing to do with no Donald Trump. This is America, and how certain people in America still see black people. You laughed and rejoiced when Rush Limbaugh passed away, as if Rush Limbaugh was taking all the racism with him into the grave. That didn't work out too well, did it?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Not at all. One thing is this, because we're just at this whole thing, but we're talking about all the stuff that affects this trauma. You know, what are our kids going to think when they see certain things? I remember sitting with Assad, and we were watching Eric Gardner, and we watched the light leave from Eric Gardner's eyes. And the officer who choked him out just refused to let go of him in the same way that Derek Chauvin had his knee on Floyd's neck. You know, what is going to be the epigenetics that happens from the people who saw that? Cities burned and all that stuff, but what about his daughter? How's she going to feel about it? Knowing that this is the way that her father went out. Knowing that when they show our deaths and our murders to our children on TV without fear, you know, how does that play out genetically? Why isn't that, you know, when we talk about reparations, every other culture that's been wronged has received reparations except for us. Why? You know, before I get too deep into the sticks, Edwina, did you want to say something?
Me, from my perspective, that is like asking, why do, you know, why is it that things are the way that they are? Is why do we expect a system that told us a long time ago that we weren't whole human beings to treat us as such? I think, you know, that's something that the, you know, Black Power movement touched on, is like, we need our own systems. We need our own protection. We can't expect the people that protect and uphold the ideologies of the KKK that permeates law enforcement. We know this. It permeates the legal system to try to enforce rules that apply to us when we have a hard time. I have a hard time finding a leader right now that represents our voice in any of these places. There are a few coming along now, but I can remember times growing up when they would leave bodies uncovered when someone was shot in the city that I grew up in. They would leave them there. They wouldn't respect them. And I'm like, okay, that sort of thing has an influence on the way that people like myself, as children who saw that, process the idea of death and loss and human life. And, you know, I feel like they're programming the idea that they are entitled to protect their lives, because I don't know if you guys saw, but even after the trial with that last boy, I feel like saying their names give them too much power. It makes them into some sort of historical figure. You know what I mean? Their names go down in this infamy that I don't really think that we should be given a name and a face to. They're bad people. But I'm like, that last boy that did the shooting at the Black Lives Matter rally, they gave him whole conventions and a round of applause. They are encouraging this sort of behavior. And I think two things that we could be doing that I was speaking with someone about earlier and that I've heard is, like, I feel like more of us need to have a gun license, even if you don't open carry. I think if more black people had gun license, they would take the things that we say more seriously, as well as insurance policies. I don't think enough of us have insurance for our interests, our financial interests, to be of importance when it comes to why our deaths go unaccounted for so often in these different spaces. And we can talk about the ones that make the news, but there's a lot of them that don't meet the algorithm, and there's still a lot of these things happening every day, and we don't have protection, and I feel like we're looking for it in the wrong places.
Can I interject more importantly? Because when we talk about police shootings, only 40% of police shootings nationwide are reported. Only 40%. Right. So there's whole sections of things that we're missing that are not making the news, that are not on the AP wire, as they would say.
Exactly.
But I digress. Back to you.
Exactly what I'm saying. We don't know the half of the story. It gets swept under the rug, and we get upset about the ones that get the media attention, but it's a systematic issue, and we're asking them to be in charge of making legislation that cares about us when it's obvious that the system doesn't. You know what I mean?
Definitely. All right, so I'm gonna go through this listing again, and since we're talking about intergenerational, what are some cultural patterns that we might see that speak to intergenerational trauma that we all have culturally, that we all know, right? You know, and as an example, that we know that it's been taught to us because it's a cultural pattern. What is something that anybody thinks that one or several of these cultural patterns are?
I think, and this is just my opinion of it all, but I think that because we were never considered an entire human being in the days of slavery, we were property, we were partially human in their mind. I think that still follows in the generations. And so when the Jewish Holocaust happened, those were people who were being oppressed. But in slavery, we weren't considered people. So we are treated like animals because they thought of us as less than that. You don't throw a tarp over a deer when you kill it in the woods, so why would you throw a tarp over a nigger when you kill him? Because it's that's the mentality. That's the thought process. We are less than human, so we aren't treated as human.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think is a cultural thing that we do? That's something that's, you know, like for me, my example is, literally, if you like, it's because it's made to keep you safe. You know, literally, like, you have to be as respectful as you can when you talk to a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because if you're not respectful, they'll hurt you. They'll do something to you. You know, something bad will happen to you. Because in that moment, they can decide what they can do with you or anything else. And I think that's a, a thing, like, in all my interactions with police officers, which 99.99 have been favorable. I haven't been in any trouble or anything else like that. But literally, with the exception of one time where literally I called the police, I told them that someone tried to rape somebody, like, you know, and when the person who was in a complete room was describing them, I come out of the lodge, right? Now, never mind that one of my lodge brothers, literally and figuratively, he works for the police department, right? And so I come out, and I'm like, I called the police, blah, blah, blah. And this dude's like, turn around. He's like, turn around. I was like, turn around? I was like, turn around for what? He was like, turn around, put your hands behind your back, right? So everybody's like looking at this dude like he's crazy, like he's literally crazy, right? And so Felix is like, no, he called the police. He's the person who called. And he's like, he didn't care about none of that. He was like, fuck all this shit y'all talking about. I'm right. You're wrong. And I was like, I knew enough to keep myself quiet. I said, what's your badge number? My badge number is blah, blah, blah. And he was talking crazy, right? Now, meantime, in between time, while everybody's trying to reason with this man and tell him I had nothing to do with it, and that shirt that I'm wearing, you know, because he said it had a horizontal pattern, right? He based it off the fact that I was black and I had a horizontal pattern in my shirt. He didn't ask me where I was. He didn't even do his investigation. He just knew he had somebody, right? So meantime, between time, when the sergeant comes on the scene, who I knew personally, the sergeant has the girl brought, and the girl's like, she's like, no, he's the one who called for me. And he's like, take the cuffs off. And the dude was taking his time taking the cuffs off me. And then he's like, do you want to file a call? He told that guy, he's like, you go to the station. And that dude took off, got in the car, and went to the station. He's like, you want to make a complaint? I said, yes, I absolutely want to make a complaint. I said, because not only was my rights violated, he didn't care anything I had to say. He didn't ask me no fucking questions at all. But I knew I had to stay calm in every situation so that you don't get killed. I've had police officers, me being a victim, I've had a police officer put a gun to my head, tell me he's going to blow my fucking head off. And I'm like, I'm the victim. I was like, I just got shot at. I'm the person, you know, the people you want, you know. And it was crazy because my friend who was shooting at the police officer, who was shooting at the car that was shooting at us, right, when he came, right, the officers literally ran down on him and didn't believe he was who he was until they went through his wallet and saw his badge. And they still kept the cap on him, right? And it didn't matter that he was black. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. I don't have to listen to you when you're black. But if you're not calm, right? And it's funny because they expect you to be calm while they're yelling at the top of their lungs because they're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
They're nuts. They're adrenaline pumping. They're roid raging. Let me not say it like that. But you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what are some other things that have been culturally taught to us that's trauma-based or trauma-filled?
It's even with the pattern of speech that we use in these situations. The way we speak to white people and the diction and the forms that we speak in are different than they are when we are at home or around our friends, because we have to speak white, per se, in order to be even thought of as intelligent.
You know what's crazy? One of the things that used to bug me out is that, you know, it was like, oh, I had to go up there and talk to God and three more white people. Before I used to laugh at that because it used to make me laugh and shit. But I realized, like, you know, some people really feel that way. Like, oh, I had to go talk to God and three more white people because some people want to have an elevated status with that. But what are some things that we have to figure out? Like, even on our jobs, you know, which is a trauma-filled response, like how you talk, why you talk. Or when people say, hey, you're remarkably eloquent. Hey, you're remarkably eloquent.
I've worked in radio most of my life, And I remember being at a black station in the early 90s. It was an urban station, and the majority of us were black. And so this car company wanted us to do a radio commercial for them. And the way our production was set up is all the pieces were set for us to do, and whoever had time would go in, pull a script, and do that commercial. And it just so happened our midday guy, who was very well spoken, pulled the car commercial to do. And he did what they wanted and produced the commercial. When the sales guy went back to them with the piece, they weren't happy with it because they said he sounded too white and we want to appeal to the black audience more because he spoke properly. So they refused to pay for the commercial until it sounded more black to them.
Wow. That's wild. Oh, man. Well, listen, we got 5 minutes. We got 5 minutes before the end of this broadcast. Before we do that, Van Meadows, can you give us a rundown for Epiphany Radio Universe for the rest of the week?
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, join Epiphany Radio tomorrow night for the Erotic Love Zone with Miss VIP and La Pearl La Negra. Thursday night, Charles, to get down with J-Rob, the wise son, and yours truly, Poetic. Friday night will be Renaissance Poetry with your host, Keith Eric. Saturday night is going to be Let's Talk About It, where we do date night differently with yours truly, Poetic. Sunday night, y'all, is going to be The Inspiration Factory with your host, Divine Inspiration, Paul Sampson, and yours truly, Poetic. Monday night, y'all, is King and Queen's Quarters with King Atterbury and Queen Simmons. And then we'll be right back here next Tuesday for one of Mojave's great shows, man, whether it be Fly Speak, The Hidden, Honey
Tripper.
Oh,
it's a Honey Tripper 2.0. Honey Tripper 2.0.
There you have it.
The ladies. It's the ladies. Listen, it's the ladies talking this time, brother. We got to get out the way. We got to get out the way. And it's also the return of Passionate the Poet.
I'm going to be there for all of that. Mojave, back to you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. All right. So this is only a thing that we can look at certain things that are happening, depending on this, like literally how families are impacted. You know, some of the things when we talk about the disconnection, the denial, detachment, distance, impaired self-esteem, trauma bonding. Oh, trauma bonding is so major, and we don't even have enough time. And this is school night, plus I'm sick. Estrangement, neglect, abuse, violence. You know, and I think a lot of times when we're looking at all this stuff, like people's responses to different things happen because of this intergenerational trauma that happens when things are going on. And you know, if you don't know how to recognize things, please seek a professional help. Go see somebody. I know in particular if you need a few black therapists or life coaches and things of that sort, or actually therapists, not just like the coaches. I think life coaches happen after you get to therapy, but literally and figuratively, it is also amazing to actually look at the things that are happening from the church. But since we have 90 seconds, I want to personally thank everybody who came out this evening. Oh, Wendell dropped already. I want to thank Lisa Lips. I want to thank Danielle. I want to thank Dawood. I want to thank Van Meadows. I want to thank Zawina. And I want to thank everybody who came through who were listening briefly this evening. We didn't really get a chance to go into it because, you know, it's a school night. Plus, I'm taking my attention. But I will tell you that this episode is about to end. Ladies and gentlemen, good night. Coming. God bless you. We are not done. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. We were missing a couple people. We're going to get it all together. But I got the plan for next month. We're going to make it all happen, make it work. So thank you all for coming out. God bless you. Good night. If you have any more research, if you want some of the links and some of the research I did, please hit me directly in my back channel, IG, whatever, or text me if you have a number. I'll make sure that I share those with you. We're going to have a great time. Thank you for coming out tonight. It's been a fantastic show. Thank you for coming to War Council, and we're out. All right? Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.